I have a couple things to talk about today. Just a few.
I feel like we're on such a professional podcast because of how Don's dressed. like I feel like this is the Ramsey show or something.
Right? I'm contra Ramsey. You're like, no, so against no, Dave feels Ramsey. Like,
let me tell you something, kids, about hedging risk. I'm just going to do the welcome.
Time cost of money.
Now. I'm going to do the welcome.
Really?
Now.
I don't think I'm ready. I don't think I'm ready.
You've got your napkin balled up in your hand.
I know.
Your
this Perrier, is my life.
Your Perrier. You seem all right.
Let me get a fresh wad.
Oh, my goodness.
There's so many napkins.
I find them all over the house, dude. I get in trouble. They find their way into the washing machine, into the dryer. That's a problem. And when Bailey and I, when he was still at the house, we would go through stacks on stacks.
You need
of
to become
paper
a
towels.
Handkerchief guy.
Well,
he thinks they're gross.
I don't really do anything with them. It's like a comfort. It's you like, you know how the corner of the blankie as a kid, like you wanted the corner.
he's still,
this is
makes
the corner.
So much sense. The corner of your blankie.
Yeah.
That's
it's
fair.
Serving no other purpose. Like you wouldn't go like, hey, you should replace that blankie corner with a piece of tissue. You know, or like a handkerchief. It's serving no purpose other than comforting the one to whom it is being clasped by.
Clasped.
Can I do the welcome now?
I feel like that was something Lawson would say from the pulpit. Oh, yeah, I like this. y'all want to do our voice exercises?
No.
Awesome. Why did you just make a cat?
Right? I thought you would go with dog.
Nobody on who listens to this thinks that I just did that. No one thought it.
Yes.
Nobody thought that.
Oh, that's awesome, dude. I mean, if you're listening, like that's the noise that went next, and you freaking nailed it, bro. People underestimate your humor. Really. Comedic delivery is should go on your resume.
You should try to proficient throw some into your sermons.
You know how it says proficient at the bottom of it? You know, it'd be just random
skills, humor.
Like, I would be impressed if somebody put on there can cleanly flip a pancake because I can't do it. Somehow I go for the scoop, and then it's just there's something in my brain.
You can't flip it?
Oh. No, dude. Like, somehow it,
it's
like,
your hesitation. You can't hesitate. You
it, gotta, like, slings on the side of the pan, or it get. You know, I'm trying to do three in the pan all together, so I'm crowded.
Together,
yeah.
I get that way about omelets.
Oh, I can.
All eggs. My omelets just turn into scrambles.
No, bro. That's the worst.
That's I mess sad. Them up every time.
Sad.
You know?
So I'll be like, I want an omelet. Okay.
Getting that skillet scramble. I hear what you're saying. They say the best way to cook an omelet is very low and slow. Like, that's the French way.
That's probably why I can't do it right.
Every time Beth asks me for something that
look,
I can't
provide, dude, he just found his way into my hand.
He actually took his shoes off. He has some between his toes and the balls.
Just clasping. Y'all, for those who can't see me, which is everyone that's not in this room, somehow I ended up with another paper towel wad in my left hand as I held this one in my right. I think we're ready now.
Welcome to Progress of Grace, the podcast by Mercy Hill Church. My name is Lawson Harlow, and with me today I have Blake Terrell and Don McCullough.
Hey,
that's what I almost said.
Yeah.
I'm leaving it. So, Don, what are we doing today?
Oh, so today, what are we doing today? Today, we will discuss the title of today's episode, which is... What is it, Blake? What is it? Church Wild Game Supper, a taste test challenge.
Except it's not a taste test challenge.
Is it not?
How do you know?
Unless somebody brought giraffe, I think we're safe.
That's how wild it ought to be. Can you imagine, like, I don't know how you say this, but like standpoint epistemology, if the apostles knew that the point where they were standing in the future, we would have signs on church monikers called Church Wild Game Supper? Like, that's a pretty bold.
Yeah.
They would be like, what is taking
place? You think Peter got that vision?
I mean, he had a big, That's what I'm saying. What's all in that sheet?
I think that's there.
Oh, you're saying like a giraffe is in
I'm saying the whole shebang is there, dude. All of it.
Bro, Matt, never mind.
There's not a thing.
An elephant?
Yes. If you wanted to take one down and carve it up. There's nothing against, there's no law against that.
No, that's fair. I'm with
Except
you.
If you take its tusks.
Different law. Different law.
Well, there might be a poaching law, too. Sir, I want to show you some scripture.
God He's says, like, I want to I show you the, this.
Yes. I want to show you the inside of a jail cell. Hey, did y'all see where Josh Howard did a podcast on post-millennialism with Owen
yeah,
Strand?
Yeah, I watched it. I live text Josh while I listened
did
to it.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. It was great. It was a good time.
Oh, you were listening to it, but he wasn't like actually doing the podcast at the time.
No. I mean, he recorded it a couple days before.
You know
it came
what
out.
I think this podcast should do? Like, this is.
Oh, no.
This type of podcast, right? Is we should host a debate between Owen Strand and Owen Strand's parody account. I almost tweeted under Josh, great podcast, but I'm not listening unless there's a shout out to Owen Strahan parody. You think I got you in trouble, Lawson?
When? Right now?
Yeah.
With what?
I felt good about that.
I thought that was funny.
They're not, he and Owen aren't as close anymore as they used to be.
I have an appreciation for him.
Yeah, for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah, but they used to be, y'all used to be like, didn't y'all used to talk?
Go camping together?
I mean, I've
stuff?
Messaged him. I mean, I was in a class with him, and I've messaged him on Twitter.
It's not like he was your professor.
Number. Yeah.
Yeah, there was just a time when I felt more guilty about making Twitter jokes about him, and now I don't.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Like, y'all were closer than you are now.
I mean, close is a pretty strong term.
Why are y'all so estranged?
We're not. We were never close enough to be estranged
send
now.
Send him a birthday card again.
Like, that man doesn't know my name. Like, if I text him, he's going to be like, Lawson who? I mean, and Lawson's not a popular name.
Yeah.
There's like three of us in the world. There's actually more.
You should name a son Grace son.
I've told you this.
No.
Yeah, no. My original like son, my first son's name, my plan was Grayson.
But like G-R-A-C-E-S-O-N.
Yeah, but Beth was like, you can't spell it that way. It's weird. And I'm like, ah.
That's so you went Haddon?
Something with Haddon.
That was number two.
My first names went Grayson. I liked Gray, just Gray. Mm-hmm. But that would be named after Gray Allison from Mid America.
Fair.
Walker.
That'd have been terrible.
So Walker. I'm just kidding. Walker is a first name, but I was gonna name him William
Texas
Walker.
Ranger.
Golly. I mean, Haddon is Haddon Walker. That's his middle name.
Yeah.
Walker's his middle name.
I like Walker.
Yeah, Haddon Walker is
as a middle name.
Yeah. And so,
you know what Beth's names were for the boys that she didn't get any of them? Peter McCarty. What's another?
You had me in the first half. I'm not going to lie.
Name them after things she loves.
Of all Delta Pottery.
What? Delta Pottery Harlow.
Get over here, Delta
that's
Pottery.
What if y'all's dog was named? What if Pottery was Delta's middle name?
Delta's middle name is Bell.
Delta Pottery. Yeah, it's Pottery now.
The Delta Bell.
Oh, my goodness. I missed this podcast. This part of it specifically. So Julie's filling in at another, can I say church? I mean, why can't I say that?
Yeah, why couldn't you?
Right? I was like, am I going to make this super ambiguous? So my mom is a church secretary. Mm. My mom took off the month of January and February, and Julie's filling
the dream.
In. Right? Julie's filling in. Huh? Yeah, she's like on sabbatical. I'll just tell the whole story, dude. It's hilarious. So my mom gets this job like back like October-ish, maybe September. Mm. And you know how church jobs are. They're not putting ads in the
this
commercial appeal.
This is going to be I've Got Friends episode.
Yeah. Like, they don't put ads in the commercial appeal, right? It's
right.
Normally like word of mouth. They might have their eye on somebody.
Sure.
That was my mom, who has been a historical church secretary at other places for a long, long time. So she's credentialed for what it's worth, right? And so,
as far as church secretaries go,
right? Yeah. So she accepts the job and then is over at our house telling us how she had accepted the job, how was the job, because it was very new.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, but don't y'all have a trip coming up? Like, aren't you planning on taking off, like, y'all are going to Florida January and February for the whole month. She's like, yeah, I didn't tell him that part. I said, literally in this conversation, I said, don't you think a little bit of an ethical dilemma? Like, that's a problem, right? I mean, I'm like blown away that my mom would take a job.
That's the definition of doesn't need that job.
Right, in three months. She's like, well, they don't like it. You know, they can fire me or whatever. And I was like, oh my God, the boldness. So somehow in this setting, it comes about, well, Julie can fill in. Mm-hmm. And my mom like lights up like, oh yeah, like will you? And Julie's like, I don't see why not. So Julie went and trained for a couple of days in November and a couple of days in December and has been up there filling in. So she ended up, they were like, the head pastor calls her by the phone at her desk. Hey, come see me. So she comes in. She's like, what is happening? This literally just happened yesterday. And so she comes into his office. He's like, listen, I just want to tell you something. We have never had anybody come in and be able to do task like you do. I mean, just starts lavishing her with praises. And I go, babe, stop. She goes, what? She goes, I'm not finished. Like, he kept on and on. I go, yeah, you should have hit him with the gospel. But then it hit me. The gospel's not always evangelistic by nature.
I was going to let work it out.
That's when it hit me. Like, I was making a funny joke.
Right.
But I'm like...
That's when I got this text message this morning. That was the conversation.
It hit me. I was like, I was being a...
You're trolling.
Yeah. But in the end, it's like, we should be able to give an answer for the hope that we have, no matter if that individual is in Christ or out of Christ. And then Charles sent me another like podcast on John Piper, What Is Love? And it kind of had the wheels.
Did you listen
turning.
To it already?
I did twice.
Charles, he's better than I am. I saw it, but I didn't listen to it.
I didn't listen to it yet either.
John Piper loves some syllogisms. Mm. Like, he walks through, and my brain doesn't really work that way.
You're talking about, like he's like, premise this one, is true. Premise two, premise three.
Yeah, this must be true. This must be true. So he works through that. So anyways.
Yeah, I actually, when I heard that, that was the first text message I read today.
Which is?
The gospel isn't just for evangelism.
Right.
And I thought that if it was just for evangelism, pastors are useless. Like, there is like 90% of what we do is remind people of the gospel.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the whole of our ministry is to recite the gospel over and over again to people so that they'll be comforted and encouraged by it. Hmm. That's the whole of our
task.
It's
like, hey, these things that define my work here are not natural to me. Because I really don't care about this work. Right?
Yeah, that's
I mean, right. That's what it is. For.
Was there a sandwich in there? Was it like a compliment, insult, compliment?
I don't know. I'll tell you the rest. I don't care. He's like, so Virginia, that's my mom, is not going to be here forever.
Golly,
yes, dude.
He killed your mom.
Right?
Dang.
Julie's like, I mean, Julie came home beaming. It was like, I feel so good. Like, it was so good to get that compliment. And, you know, if there's ever a moment where a job comes open and she's supposed to be training for somebody else's, like the financial secretary's job, she's supposed to be training for the next couple days because she'll be on vacation in like June. And so she's going to go do her job. So Julie's suddenly become like an in demand church temp
worker. Good for her.
Won't he do it?
Right?
Church temp. She should start an agency.
Right. Call her the
church temp agency.
Church temp lady.
I'm trying. Never mind. I was trying to think of idioms there. Not idioms, right. Like.
Puns?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you ready to start the rest of this episode?
Temp old ministries. All right.
I think that was everything.
I don't have anything. I'm just here. So I won't get fined.
What's an idiom? That's a question. That's what we just
backhanded doing. Compliment.
Well, it has to do with animals. We need some. It's getting hot in here, dude. It's blazing.
Skin a cat. That's how you skin the cat.
How about one that has to do with eating animals?
Can have your burger and eat it too.
What? That's not it. That's have your cake. And
no,
eat
no.
It too.
The idiom's burger.
What?
Yeah, y'all are just wrong.
There's something about like eating Oh, she eats like a bird.
We open she up a can of like worms.
Bird. She eats like a bird.
Eats like a bird.
You know, that's actually not a compliment. That's actually an insult.
It's like you're picking
because a bird eats, I think, like 3 times its body weight.
Oh, sheesh.
But people use it to say, you know, she just barely eats anything.
Yeah.
All right. So let's find out in the rest of this episode.
You eat like a bird? Whatever.
How about if we can eat the bird?
Mm.
Would you eat a bluebird? How hungry do you have to be?
This man is
to
literally
eat the things that are just ornamental in your life.
I don't know what that means.
Like you know, a red bird, a cardinal is an ornamental thing. I don't look at it as a food group.
But it could be.
That would be assuming though that it's real.
What?
Birds aren't real.
That cardinal is real.
Oh, you're saying
it's not just a camera that the government uses to watch us.
Birds didn't exist before.
Do we have to clear out the conspiracy theories? So at church on Sunday, somebody's like, "Hey, dude, I joined the welcome committee, and so I was up there talking with them, and they're like, somehow it comes up like
I we're a church plant. It's a welcome crew.
Welcome crew.
We don't have committees.
Sorry.
Yeah, thank you.
So I go up there, and it's like mid conversation. I'm like, "What are y'all talking about?" And they're like, "We think that NASA." Went to, like, they spent a bunch of money going to the bottom of the ocean. And now all of a sudden they abandoned that and they're just focused on space. Wait, why do you think that they're not investigating the ocean anymore?
Because Leviathan's down there.
And they were speculating, like, bro, they found something. Like, they found something and said, we're out. I said, bro, you know what they found? They're like, what?
Leviathan.
I go, darkness.
You're the worst.
Just straight, it got down to the bottom. It's like, bro, it's dark down here. We're gonna need a ton of lights. You know what we could do? People care about the sky a whole lot more.
Right.
And as a federal agency that needs federal funding from taxpayer dollars, it's like, it makes a whole lot more economical sense to be like, y'all look up.
Because a rocket.
Like, we're going to study this whole thing.
Because a rocket taking off is way more interesting than a submarine going underwater.
Exactly.
It's like, hey, we took some videos down here of the submarine. It's just blackness. I have to take this coat off.
We were at dinner the other night with the Delta State BSU guys.
I heard.
And, Isaiah was with us, and he was like, look, Daddy, there's a, and he pointed at some kind of bird out the window, and Josh Warren was like, so I see you've taught him that birds are real. I didn't even remember.
It's like, how dare you?
Right.
All right. Do we know what we're talking about? Do you know what we're talking about, Lawson?
I have a feeling
you know what we're talking about. Yeah, bits and pieces. Can I give the outline?
Yeah, but yeah. You can.
What's the butt?
The butt is,
this is really controversial. And my whole thing last week about the pyramids and the Nephilim
those are
conjecture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I was going to say per our conversation, I was not operating on your system though.
Okay.
And that was the hang up when you were talking about it via text. And so as text, I was like, no, I'm not adopting your system. Your time bubble system.
Oh, no, I'm not even getting in that.
All right, cool. Let's go then. I don't know why you have to bring that up.
Why'd you bring that up?
It's just good to remind. It's just good to remind people about the time bubble.
No, nobody knows about the time bubble. We don't talk about the time bubble.
Oh, I'm sorry. Never mind. Onward.
Don't ask Don about the time bubble.
Okay.
Now, my premise
Sunday's
is
conversation. About, I don't hey, think Don,
I'm alone
about
this?
The time bubble.
I don't think I'm alone in this.
Okay, well, let's talk about it.
Where animal death existed outside of the garden? I don't think I'm alone in this.
Before the fall.
No, you're not alone in the idea that animal death existed before the fall.
Right.
The inside outside the garden is the argument that actually would bring in the other portion.
Yeah, but we don't have to bring that in because the argument can still stand regardless of the time bubble, I'm saying that the garden had boundaries.
You know what? Of course it did. They were made to expand.
Yes.
All right, let's talk about it. Let's just do it.
But the whole premise,
look at us. Here we are.
Here we are.
Let's just do the thing.
Right.
Outline it. Do whatever you need to do.
Yeah.
Take us there.
So where I'm driving down the road, and something Lawson said to me, like, I'm talking to Blake for all those that can't see me.
Everybody.
Right. So I'm driving down the road, and there was a text or something he had said in a text, or maybe something he had verbally said to me that Ishmael was a wild donkey of a man.
Well, that's a quote. That's a biblical quote.
Yeah.
But I'm saying,
but you said
I'm
it,
not
right.
attributing the actual
after your
reference to you. I'm saying that you.
Yeah,
were,
I got you. I got you.
Yeah. So
people do that though.
You know, even walking through Exodus and thinking about how you know
this is 16:12.
Yeah, the don't pick that back up. Who can do a podcast? He is still as he can be.
We're hopeless
through all the banter, and the minute we're like, "Hey, let's talk about something serious."
That's not true.
I need to get
licking a plastic egg.
Will you please just
room?
Talk?
God, I can't do that. So we were thinking through the wild donkey or the donkey, excuse me, and the lamb.
Yep.
Going to the temple.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So in Galatians, I'm gonna give you all the puzzle pieces, and then we can put them around. If you go to Galatians, it talks about how these two women, Sarah and Hagar,
mm-hmm.
are also mountains,
mm-hmm.
Sinai and Zion, and they're also two covenants,
mm-hmm.
right? One is covenant of, what does he call it? Does he even name the covenant? He just says two covenants. His one is bearing children for slavery.
I'm looking it up for the...
One is bearing children for slavery, and she is in slavery with her children, which is, I think he says, this present Jerusalem. That's in slavery,
but
the Jerusalem above is our
she
mother.
She corresponds to the present Jerusalem, for she is in slavery with her children. But the Jerusalem above is free, and she is our mother.
Right. But you, brothers, are like Isaac, right? Children of promise.
Mm-hmm.
But you must be born again, right? This is it. Doesn't say that in there, but we already know from the gospel.
Well, it says it in Galatians earlier.
Okay, so you must be born again.
You must be adopted.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But.
Yeah, agree.
Yeah,
I'm saying,
but I'm saying like
your entrance into a family.
You are born in bondage.
Affirm.
A child of slavery.
Affirm.
Can we say you could draw the correlation that you are born into Hagar's covenant?
You're born into the covenant of works, period. Yes,
yes. Period.
Yeah, yeah.
And her son is a child of slavery.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
And he's a wild donkey of a man. Okay? It just makes me think that this whole picture of going to the temple with a lamb and with a donkey is representative of the means by which that you are ushered into, what did I say?
Is this the 80 text from Sunday night?
Yeah,
while
maybe.
I was at small group?
Yeah.
The what?
Like oh. The 80 text
oh, yeah,
from
yeah,
Sunday
it was.
Night.
But I mean, you're talking about entering
in. I haven't read them.
Entering into
562 messages.
Entering into the temple, and we were making the argument, and appropriately so, that the garden is a temple. It's intended to be temple-ish, just as Adam is intended to
yes.
be the priest of the
yes,
garden.
Yes, but before you get there, I was drawing that he is. Oh man, that's gonna bother me, dude. Domestication, dominion. He is taken dominion and then domesticated into the camp of Israel for use. That the donkey is.
Oh yeah, the donkey would live its entire life.
Yes,
as one that was redeemed, laboring inside of Israel for its.
And it had
use.
Dominion taken upon it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, I think it's yeah.
And so I was drawing that parallel to say there seems to be this idea that it's not just a lamb and a donkey, like Sarah and Hagar.
Right.
Zion and Sinai, or Isaac and Ishmael, but these two animals represent a great exchange.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's the point.
Because mm-hmm. you said, first there's redemption.
First there's redemption, then consecration. I mean, redemption makes something consecrated. So,
and this donkey would then be consecrated.
It would be consecrated.
Through the temple.
Right.
Through the ministry of the temple to then
Yeah, its consecration is based upon its redemption. It is obviously set apart by the fact that it is redeemed, right? So
yes.
It's a recognition that something paid the price for this, and therefore it is given back to the person as their possession, but something that is marked by redemption, therefore consecrated. It is set apart for something specific. And its set apartness is made all the more clear by the fact that something died for it. So if you're going back to the temple and you're thinking about, or the tabernacle, you're looking at the ways that everything was consecrated. It was blood and oil. Mm-hmm. And so that donkey would have been consecrated essentially by the blood of the lamb that was slain and given back to them. The price was paid. God demands the first. That animal dies in the place of the donkey. The donkey then makes its way out as having been redeemed and therefore consecrated.
But are we looking at this donkey as, I don't know, is it symbolic?
Absolutely, it's symbolic.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too.
Yeah, it has to be. That's
the whole temple symbolic, because it says in Hebrews, true, make this according to the copy that you were shown.
Yeah, that's because
like,
it's representing
there's a heavenly place,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so the donkey to me is like, I mean, there, I don't know how you get away from saying Ishmael was a wild donkey of a man, and he was the firstborn as a symbol, if you will, to Hagar of being one born unto slavery, right? A covenant that he was. I mean, he earned.
What do you mean?
In a sense, like, well, if the other covenant is all of grace,
right?
This one is works unto death.
Yeah, this is why we live with both of these functioning inside of the world today. And you are either under, and every individual is born naturally underneath the covenant of works. You're born to the slave woman because you're born in slavery to sin, and you're born into slavery to death.
How does that one make that transfer?
Yeah, so that's Galatians earlier on in Galatians 3. You have to have someone who has intention to redeem. Mm. And in the midst of that intention to redeem, they have to have the intention and they have to have the ability. So like you could imagine there'd be a situation where a man has a donkey, the donkey is born or gives birth firstborn, but he actually has no lambs to sacrifice. And therefore it's like, well, dead donkey, right? Has to be. And then there's the situation where one actually has the ability. So the donkey's born, and as the donkey's born, it's like, well, I've got a lamb that I can sacrifice right here to preserve the life of the donkey. So he has to be both willing and able. And so in the midst of willingness and ability, he pays the price by offering the lamb as a sacrifice. That price must be paid because God is demanding the life of the firstborn, and he's made provision that if one gives up and sacrifices a lamb, then the donkey then can be redeemed. And that's obvious. Like, it's impossible for us to come into the New Testament, pick
to
up the word
life.
Redeemed, to live it all.
Like, yeah, that's the thing. And to live where?
Yeah, inside. It, yeah.
Inside the community into which it has been purchased.
Yeah, exactly. This is why I like the picture of the family aspect of this with the firstborn child. And I think this is the progression. So some are like, well, you can't. It's like, it's one or the other. I'm like, I don't think it's one or the other. I think it's actually both and. Which you had, this is one of your famous quotes from John, which is like, whenever there's a
double entendre,
it's like it's probably both things. Was that you, or did I read that somewhere else? Well, somewhere. So, did you say this, or did I read this? And it was something along the lines of where scholars disagree on two major things. It's probably both.
Oh, I did not say that.
Okay, I read that then.
Well, why don't you say you said it?
I didn't say it. I know that I read that. It's not original, and so. But I think what you have there is the statement there of redemption. When you're looking at the donkey and the lamb, there's a redemption price to be paid where the donkey is restored to the family that it was born in, for lack of better terms. And then you have the child that's introduced as the other theme. And the child is bought with silver or gold and, again, adopted back into the family, which I think is the way you have to understand that. Because it doesn't belong to you. The child doesn't belong to you. Matthew Henry, I think, beautifully said, you have no interest in the child. You're there to take care of it for 30 days, and it belongs to the Lord for those 30 days and forever if you don't redeem it, but you're going to redeem it. And so you redeem the child, and it's adopted back into your family. So I think the progression is donkeys can be redeemed. Unclean creatures can be redeemed. If they are redeemed, they're brought back into the family. Children of God, this is my argument, children of God must be redeemed. The Father is going to redeem the children, which is the argument of Galatians, because you're not actually, even though we look at it, and you're born inside of the covenant of works, you're born inside the covenant of works as the law is your guardian, your schoolmaster, up until the fullness of time has come, up until faith comes. And so you're born under that covenant, but you're born under that covenant still under the reality of God's election of you from before the foundation of the world. You belong to him. And the reason that the Son comes is to redeem those whom God had elected from before the world began. The Son then comes, pays the price for the children. As he pays the price for the children, they're redeemed by the blood of the Lamb. They're brought back into, or brought into, the family of God. And the statement there is, because you are sons, the Spirit of God.
comes in and dwells within you. So the important part of that is the language of because you are children. A lot of times we read that and it's like, oh, I'm a child because the Spirit of God came into me and dwelled with me. But there's truth to that. But the cause and effect has to be in the biblical order. And the biblical order is the Spirit of God indwelled you because you were elected to be a son. Like the end of the day, I'm thinking, why in the world did the Spirit of God rush upon me, give me life, make me cry, Abba, Father? It's not because I did something. It's because the Father elected me to be a son, which is why Ephesians loudly puts adoption before the foundation of the world.
All right, so you're majoring on what I think comes natural, like to the way that we think as humans, right? It's like, I get being born again. I get being adopted into the family of God.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like what I want to major on is maybe the minor.
Fair.
Which
okay.
I might be the major, as major, which is this transition of donkey, right?
Yeah.
Like, in the end, we know that Christ is not only our elder brother.
Yeah.
But we also know that he's the Lamb of God.
Absolutely.
Right? And so now we have this idea of, you just said, when you were just speaking, you said, there's a clean animal
mm-hmm.
and there's an unclean animal.
Right.
What do you think are the distinctives, objective distinctives, which determines what is clean and what isn't clean?
Wasn't it about hoof amount?
Was it?
Yeah, I mean, there's yeah, actually.
Like, I want to lay it all out.
Yeah, I think.
I don't know what the verse is.
Yeah, we just looked
about
that
hoof
one up.
Amount, right?
Well, I mean, it's about more than that.
Or
it's,
hoof style. I mean, I'm saying that's part
of
it.
Yeah, it's cleft and how they chew the cud and all of that. Hold on one second.
It really is.
It is.
I know. It's just a funny way to say it.
Because it clarifies it. And I mean, I think, actually, Leviticus 11. One moment. And I'll read it to us. Are you already there? Did you
no,
beat
brother.
Me? Huh?
No, I'm not. Still looking for it.
Leviticus. Oh, it didn't give me the chapter options. That's weird. Leviticus 11. Yeah, clean and unclean animals, chapter 11. Do you want me to read this? I'll read it.
Sure.
And the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying to them, speak to the people of Israel, saying, these are the living things that you may eat among all the animals that are on the earth, whatever parts the hoof and is cloven footed, and choose the cud among the animals
What's
you may
eat. What's a cloven foot?
It's split.
Cloven foot.
I believe that's the understanding. It's a split
yep,
hoof.
The divided hoof yep. or foot.
And choose the cud among the animals you may eat. Okay. Nevertheless, among
cattle.
Those, this is, it actually clarifies, never among those that Wait. Chew the cud or part the hoof, you shall not eat these, yeah. the camel, because it chews the cud, but does not part the hoof. It is unclean to you. The rock badger, good luck killing one of those anyway, because it chews the cud, but does not part the hoof. The hare, because it chews the cud, but does not part the hoof, is unclean. And the pig, because it parts the hoof and is cloven footed, but does not chew the cud, is unclean. Nor should you eat any of their flesh, and you shall not touch their carcasses. They are unclean to you. And the waters, it goes on. Like
yeah, you got to have scales.
Everything in the waters and does not have fins and scales.
Could eat catfish, dude.
Yeah, catfish
was out.
Yeah, big unclean. But I mean, what's interesting about the clean, unclean like perspective is a lot of it has to do with the animal's diet when all is said and done. Mm-hmm. So like the catfish is a bottom feeder. It eats trash.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's some really interesting, what? Why'd you look at me like that?
Blake?
I was just...
It eats filth is what I'm saying.
Yeah
it's a filter fish.
Yeah. I was pretending to be
offended. You're a filter fish. I mean, I love catfish. It's great.
Do you think that there's something objective like clean and unclean in the hoof? Like, is there...
I think it's the way... What's interesting is it really
comes
down to Jesus.
Because God in the end says, what I call clean...
Is clean.
Is clean, yeah, period. Yeah, yeah. Like, we can take the Sunday school
there's
answer
so
and
much.
Say, like, the reality here is... God objectively drew the line in the sand
yeah.
and said, here's what's clean, here's what's unclean. And if you try to determine, it's like, well, is there really something peculiar about the hoof?
Yeah.
It's like, we can get down here in the micro, but the
yeah.
macro can't be forgotten.
Yeah.
That God determined it.
Yeah.
Period.
It is interesting that when you break those down, it really does split genuses. So mm-hmm. if you're looking at the hierarchy of kingdom, phylum, order, class, genus, species.
Yeah, you're smart, dude.
The... You made me uncomfortable. But inside of that,
Say
like genus,
again.
Huh?
Say phylum.
I will
again.
Not.
I like how you say genus.
You're
reminds with my genes. I love, sorry.
But it does seem to make distinctions between genuses, not species. And so,
tell me that like I'm a fifth grader.
So like a camel.
Don understands. He just needs help.
Right.
Like, tell Blake. Okay. So like,
and I'll listen.
Like if you looked at a horse and a zebra, you would say they have similarities.
Right.
But they're not the same. Like they can't,
right.
As far as I know, I could be mistaken, but as far as I know, they couldn't breed together.
I think they actually can.
Have you ever heard of a Hebra?
Yes, but that's because they're of the same genus. I'm almost certain that they cannot.
You know, a horse and a mule can mate.
Yeah, because they're of the same genus.
But they can't, their offspring can't procreate.
No.
I thought mules were...
A horse and a cow are too genetically and a donkey far away to produce
any can produce a mule.
But mules are
I don't think
sterile.
A mule... Right.
Mules
a mule
can't
cannot,
procreate with anything.
Right.
Not even a mule.
Right.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Pretty wild.
Interesting.
In Italy, they actually eat horse.
Cows are genetically closer to sperm whales than they are horses.
Smoke what?
I don't know. You had me Google something weird, and that's what I got. But anyway, so that is interesting. But at the end of the day, I don't think that we're given any like, oh, here's why, because these things eat this. Though I right. think that plays a role. I think that animal's diet and what specific, maybe even uses, the appropriate uses of the creature mm-hmm. come into play as well.
So I made...
What?
Go ahead,
Blake. Yeah, I was thinking about that because one of the birds you can't eat is a vulture.
Yeah, because they eat dead things.
Yeah, they're just going to be full of deadness.
Right. A lot of this is just like common sense on like, how do you protect a nomadic people from disease?
Sure. I agree. Yeah. Like, I think inside of the law, there's real, like, there's cover like your mouth when you cough. That literally, if you're sick, you would wear.
Yeah, there's a lot of
yeah, practicalities.
You're unclean.
Yeah. It's like, you don't know about germs yet, but I do.
Yeah. Mm. Go yeah. out. I mean, think about the pigs, dude. Pigs, you couldn't eat Gross. Pigs because they're walling around in their own
yeah.
poo-poo manure.
So
I made the comment at some point to someone about this whole conversation. That I think we do ourselves a disservice biblically because I think we divorce in our minds the garden from the tabernacle.
Yes, I think that's fair.
Because, I mean, if you think, like, these things are actually, I wouldn't say mirror images of each other,
they're
but
progression.
There's so much symbolism within the tapestry. So think about, like, here's the animals you can bring into the temple. They
are you referring to the actual tapestry, like the veil itself?
Yes.
Okay,
bro.
Yeah, because the veil itself
you got palm
is,
trees, pomegranates, you got all this.
You have flaming cherubim.
You got all this
yeah,
stuff,
you have all
dude.
That there.
It really is,
it is
dude.
An obvious connection. It's yeah. not even conjecture.
I mean, Jesus is the second Adam.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, like, as you're looking at this, this is not a, like, oh, rando thought. Like, this is the essential orthodox understanding of progression.
Oh,
of,
thanks. He's complimenting
yeah,
me.
Yeah, of you go.
He's saying it's not a random thought yet.
Yeah, yeah, we'll get
like
there
where we're at right now.
Yeah, yeah, we'll get to the pyramids in a minute. So
here come the Nephilim.
So like you've got Eden, the tabernacle, the temple, and then you have Christ,
right?
And then you've got the people of God,
right? Mm.
Then you have new heavens and new earth.
Yeah,
okay.
Which is a consummation of all
yeah.
those things in separate.
Yeah, that's the Christian day.
In one.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, you can go now. Sorry.
So what is clean and what is unclean? I forget where I was going, dude. Oh, that we divorce the, garden divorce the garden motif from the tabernacles. I don't know. From its reality.
Okay.
When in the end, it seemed to me a very blessed, I don't know, reminder that these are actually interpreting one another. Right, because you have in the end, like, what was Adam and Eve? I mean, we would have to say, like, what was Adam and Eve clothed with? It just says skins of an animal, right?
Yeah, you would assume a lamb.
I mean, you really would.
You would assume a lamb, yeah. I think that's fair.
And then, like, before the world is ever created, Christ is called the lamb slain before the foundation of the world.
Affirm.
So I think, like, this idea of lamb and being clean,
oh, yeah,
is before the creation of the world. And if we would have to say that there is an idea in which, you know, this garden, right, was totally and completely clean, wouldn't you say that?
It was pure. Well, how about this? Wait, let's not make conjecture. Let's just call it good.
Okay. It's totally good. The garden was totally good. But people make the argument that Okay, well, when Adam sinned, death spread, and they put categorically death as into creaturely death.
Any and all forms.
Any and all forms.
Most exclude plant.
Most exclude plant. But then, do you think that we're wrong? Is it unorthodox to say that animal death could have been a good? I hate even saying could have been. That God called animal death good.
So
that's where I'm at.
So you know where I am on the animal death. I don't think that it's an unviable take. I do not think it's an unorthodox take. I just don't subscribe to it. So like I don't think animal death existed before the fall.
Okay.
However, I can be sympathetic toward it. Like I don't think that this anathematizes anybody.
Thanks, so like guys.
Specifically you, Don.
Yeah, yeah. No, but like there are multiple guys.
This is
guys,
where like three Christians ought to be able to come into a room. And this is the benefit of the podcast, something to model.
I actually just had a conversation with somebody and they were like, so when y'all disagree about something, like do y'all just like make a line? I was like, no, normally we do it on a podcast and we argue about it.
Yeah.
And so like I would deny that animal death happened before the fall, but if I were to admit that, I think that the basic understanding has to be that life and death in animals is not a product of a fallen world. Instead, it's a normative natural process that takes place inside of a good world. At that point, you really do have to launch yourself into the new heavens and new earth and ask the question,
will we eat meat?
Well, I don't think you have to ask that question. I think you have
what
to
do you
ask
think the question is,
well, I mean, because I
will animals die and
will
the
animals die
the earth?
Because I mean, we all affirm, right? God creates ex nihilo. If he put a brisket on the plate and
yeah,
said,
that was
didn't
my
die for
somebody
that,
asked me
like,
this.
Cool.
I was like, bro, we might pick meat off a tree for all I know. I don't know.
Hey, you know what?
if we're going to dine, like Isaiah says, we'll dine on the choices of wines and the finest of meats. Like it says that, like how that gets there. I don't know.
Yeah.
But if God calls,
I mean, one of the wine specifically is interesting because that would require leaven. Hmm. Which would have been, I mean, leaven is not unclean in and of itself. However, its symbolics are interesting for it to be in the new heavens and new earth for
fermentation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know where we're going. I'm just.
No, I just wanted to talk through, like, I think in the end, like we look at the tabernacle and we're like, oh, that's a cool story. And then we look at the garden and it's like, oh, that's a cool story. But these two things actually have a lot to do with one another. I think when we look at the donkey and the lamb, we're like, oh, cool story. I really get the, when I'm a baby in the temple and somebody's paying money, I get that part, but I don't understand the part that, you know, hey, I was cast out of the garden.
Yeah.
Out of that good place.
Yeah.
I entered into a place where, you know, in the end, like God is looking at all of those things. I guess my question is God at when he cast man out of the garden, is that still an environment where we can parse and say Adam knew what was clean and what was unclean? Because how in the world does Abel know to sacrifice a certain type of animal?
Oh, so so it seems like what you're thinking of is why specifically clean animals for sacrifice. Okay, that's fair. I mean, the interesting thing about sacrifice is normally there's three different provisions, like three different options,
mm-hmm.
or you got four. You got a heifer,
mm-hmm.
you've got specific birds for those who are impoverished,
right?
You've got goats, and you've got lambs,
right?
Like all four of those seem to be normative, but I can't think of a single time. And actually, there's those that argue the abomination of desolation was Antiochus Epiphanes sacrificing a pig on the altar. Everyone recognized as a great blasphemy.
That was the first invasion. So the abomination of desolation, I've always been taught that was actually they sacrificed the priest. Human blood spilled, which was the ultimate abomination because they came in and, you know, slaughtered Israel. The destruction of, I think, the first temple was they went in and sacrificed pigs.
So Antiochus Epiphanes, the king of Syria, captured Jerusalem in 167 BC. Yes, this is before, sorry.
Right.
The desecration of the temple by offering the sacrifice of a pig on an altar.
So you had the right, it just wasn't the abomination of desolation in the end, like the final destruction of the temple, right?
I may be just outside my depth right now, just to be honest with you.
It's okay.
There's
two desolations. But only one is the one that Jesus prophesied about, which is the abomination of desolation. Which
is called the abomination of desolation. Oh, it's the book of Daniel describing it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, okay, so let's just rewind, go somewhere else now.
Where were we going?
Well, what I was trying to get at was the idea that sacrifices specifically had in mind particular animals, and that seems to have always been the case. Meaning the argument
even pre-temple.
Yeah, pre-Levitical law, so tabernacle even.
Right.
So that the sacrifices that were made were specifically clean unilaterally, that there isn't a point where someone thinks to themselves, oh, I can sacrifice a donkey.
Right. What was trapped in the bush when Abraham?
A ram.
So there has to be like this context of this idea within humanity that there are animals that are clean and unclean. And I think what we can look at in scripture is saying, like, even we have this in our natural understanding around the world that we have around us, right? Which is, it is unnatural for a lion to lay down with a lamb. Like, these things are against
which
one another.
Which is why it's so loud when you read it.
Right. It's that's weird. That's an actual carnivore. Like, that would actually eat the thing, and so now they have peace. And I think there's this whole theological concept that you can build out doctrinally around that. But I think in the end, it's like, when you take this donkey and you have this lamb, and you take the garden motif with the temple motif, it's like, bro, that is an amazing idea that you've taken something that would be considered an outcast, something that was used to call a man wild, that he was a wild donkey of a man, like untamed, had no dominion over it, was, I mean, all the things that you would say, unuseful, you know, all of this, and it is brought into the midst of the people, purchased, redeemed, consecrated, and then put to use in the midst of the people.
A good use. Yeah.
And when you see Christ come, right, Adam is cast out.
Yeah.
Right? He is in the midst of, I mean,
wilderness and danger.
Yes. Yeah. Chaos.
Yeah.
And you see this differentiating factor between donkey and lamb that goes back before pre-Levitical law. Yeah. I would go and argue and say it goes back to Adam in the garden.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whether it's in the garden or outside the garden.
Post-fall,
right?
Yeah.
And you take all of this all the way into the garden motif. And by the success of the ministry of the second Adam and his completed work, what comes down out of heaven but a sheet that contains, bro, all animals.
Says,
rise, kill, and eat.
Yeah.
Like everything.
Yeah.
I mean, do we really stop and think about that? Like, everything has been
made clean. But then, and the major thrust of that being that the Gentiles are the ones that are able to be brought into the covenant. That the clean one, Christ, was able to redeem the Gentiles as well as the Jews. Because it's too light of a thing that he should be a light just to the Jews. And so it's typical, right? In the sense that it's setting forth a reality. It's like one of the great dangers of figurative statements like this is to totally destroy the figurative. Like, the figurative point is all animals are made clean. Mm. But the reality, the deeper reality of it is the Gentiles, you should enjoy their fellowship and call them brother. Mm-hmm. So go do this ministry. And so, yeah, it is the crescendo of that whole motion is at this point, because you're done with sacrifices anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, by the time you make it to the sheet falling, the distinction between what's able to be sacrificed and what's not able to be sacrificed is done away with anyway, because the true and better lamb's already come. Now we're just talking about what can we eat? And what can we eat? The answer is, well, you can eat whatever. But the major thing you need to understand is, because this whole line of clean, unclean is pulled out, there's also now fellowship with those who are not of your ethnic heritage. Mm-hmm. Instead, there's actual fellowship between Jew and Gentile, which obviously is the thrust of Ephesians. Like, Ephesians is like, dividing wall of hostility, gone. And so, like, if you're making the distinction, have you seen the PETA billboards, which is like the various types of animals that are food, and there's a line, and it's like, these aren't food. It's like, it's all about where you draw the line. So when you think about this whole thing is pulled up, and it's like, everything's good for food. And at the very same time, every human being can be redeemed and brought into the family of God and worthy of your fellowship and even the title of brother.
Because every human being is a donkey.
Absolutely.
Cast out of the garden.
Yeah, yeah.
A wild beast of a man.
Well, I mean, even then, not even taking garden language, but taking mountain language of Ishmael and Hagar, mm-hmm. every man is born into a bondage that I think if we're super fair, and maybe not super fair, but honest, like they're, you look at people from time to time and you're like, I don't know if I can associate with them. Like just to be straightforward as I possibly can be. But the gospel destroys those distinctions. Like there's nobody inside of the church that you should look at and be like, I don't know if I can associate with them. Mm. Instead, it's a recognition. No, no, no. They're a part of my family. They've been brought in. And so my association and enjoyment of them is based upon the redemption that has been paid and the fact that they're not under the slave woman, but are instead under the free woman.
Why do you think Peter like struggled with that?
I think Peter struggled with it because he loved his Jewish heritage. And frankly, mm-hmm. I think he liked his own position. Peter could have, I think, very easily said there, but for the grace of God, go I, mm-hmm. in the case of the Judaizers.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think that's why Paul confronts him to his face. And he treated, and that's why when Paul confronts him to his face, is he's refusing to eat with the Gentiles, I think because he's still carrying the idea that they're unclean.
After he already saw the sheet.
And so, you know, it's easy to say that he falls back into his own, you know, conjecture and probably fear of man as well. Mm. Like my guess is if he was with Gentile brothers and there was no Jew around saying you have to eat with us, he would have been, all right, cool. But the moment that fear of man entered in, I think you have some squishiness.
So he was placing his knowledge over and above the knowledge of God. You know what I'm saying?
He was rebuilding what Christ destroyed. That's what I think. Yeah. So like Galatians 2, when it talks about if I rebuild what Christ destroyed,
right.
And that's always been a really difficult text. But I think what's being mentioned there is that Peter is rebuilding a dividing wall of hostility that Christ destroyed. Mm-hmm. Let me look that up so that I'm not being, so I'm not misspeaking, but I'm fairly certain that statement there. And the concept is works and grace. And so I think Peter is reintroducing or rethinking through, does that mean that I can't do this or that? But if I'm looking at this right, so you have Galatians 2:11 is when that occurs. And then in verse 15, he says, we ourselves are Jews by birth and not Gentile sinners. Yet we know that a person is not justified by works of the law, but through faith in Jesus Christ. So we also have believed in Christ Jesus in order to be justified by faith in Christ and not by works of the law. Because by works of the law, no one will be justified. And this is the text that I'm thinking of. But if in our endeavor to be justified in Christ, we too are found to be sinners, is Christ then a servant of sin? Certainly not, for if I rebuild what I tore down, I prove myself to be a transgressor. Hmm. For through the law, I die to the law. And so if he rebuilds that dividing wall, mm-hmm. then he's proving himself to going back, not being dependent upon Christ for justification, but being dependent upon works. So there's a rebuilding of that. Now, I think that really is one of the most debated texts in all of Galatians. It's like, what exactly are we talking about that he's rebuilding? But it seems to me if you carry the idea of Peter there and you bring it forward into his argument, then that's where you're going to land. Also, it fits in the context of the whole Galatians.
So, you know, I'm taking this donkey, right?
Yeah.
And I'm moving it. It's a very visual individual, right?
Yeah.
So I'm moving it from outside the garden, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bringing it into the temple, which is some sort of movement in my mind around there's this garden motif, right, inside the tapestry of the tabernacle. You have this lamb, which seemingly belongs there.
Oh, yeah, it would have been like, it would have been natural for it to be there.
Right.
There would have been many a lamb there.
Yeah. And you take in Adam's ministry, right? He's prophet, priest, and king of that garden. He fails at it. Mm. He's cast out of the garden.
Yep.
Under his ministry, there are ordinances there, even in the day of Abel, right? Where there is a distinction between clean and unclean. And without the shedding of blood, there is no forgiveness of sins. Period. And as you bring this whole thing forward, right, and Adam has lost. He's a lost cause, if you will. I'm saying that tongue in cheek.
Yeah, yeah.
Him as a representative.
We're out of the garden. Yeah, yeah.
And if you bring it in, now Christ is prophet, priest, and king.
Yeah.
Right? And
absolutely.
Under his
the fulfillment of all the offices.
Under yes, and under his ministry, right, all things are made clean. And in the end of his ministry, there is not currently an ordinance for us to look at things and say that's clean and that's unclean.
Right.
When it comes to
Food.
Food.
Right.
Food and animals.
Yeah. Or gospel witness.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which am I off base for taking that idea and saying, hey, like as you study the garden and you study Adam's failure, I believe we should be comparing it inside that tabernacle ministry.
Yeah, again, I think that it's progression. The question is always, how is it progressing? And so I think there's certainly things to be gleaned from that. The major thing that I want to understand about that motion of garden, tabernacle, temple, Christ, church, new heavens, new earth, is the presence of God. So the presence of God in garden, like he walked in the cool of the day, right? Now, there's other motifs that are obviously built. I mean, it's really hard not to take almost every motif in the Bible back to the garden. Like even in those three chapters, it's amazing what's contained in those three chapters.
Can I just make this caveat before you finish this?
Sure.
I think we look at the donkey and we do not understand that its basis is unclean. It strikes us in no way. You know what I'm saying?
What do you mean? Like we read donkey and it's like,
yeah,
oh, it's
like
a donkey.
Cool, that's a donkey, man.
Yeah,
like
no, because we don't understand clean and unclean.
We don't understand the ramifications of losing the garden
and
having the distinctions of things being clean and unclean. And now we live under grace, which is a beautiful thing because we don't have those distinctions anymore.
Right.
And it's really difficult to go back and understand the weight of that burden of saying like, There are distinctions. You
absolutely,
know what I'm saying?
It has no
negative effect on Blake, myself, or you to say there's a donkey and a lamb. To me, when we think about the child as three fathers,
then it becomes loud.
I get this. Yeah. I'm saying like when we major on the minor and we really focus our mind's attention on, that's a donkey.
Yeah,
like you can take Ishmael. Yeah. You can drive this all the way down through covenants and what you're born as and what you deserve and all you are is a beast of burden to work until your day is time to die and then you will be found wanting. Yep. You were cast out of the garden. You were considered in all of God's creatures the most unclean.
Yeah, yeah.
And now he is not only taking this donkey and bringing it into the temple in which it doesn't belong, he is redeeming it.
Right.
He is consecrating it. Yeah. He is shedding his blood for it. And when you think about a human, we place more value on the human. But in this example, he is placing an infinite value. So, I mean, he is honoring this donkey
by sacrificing.
With an infinite value. Yeah.
Which is why you have to be able to look at the whole admission you have to make, if I can say it that way, to find a great deal of beauty in the idea and the. Again, I kind of named these the big three, right? Passover, Feast of Unleavened Bread, and Consecration of the Firstborn as remembrances of the Passover. The real beauty of understanding the Passover or the Consecration of the Firstborn is to understand your identity inside of this is first and foremost the donkey. Mm-hmm. Like if you can't get there, then you read through this as just, you know, it's just an animal. And even if you're going to look at it and call it an unclean animal, which is appropriate, this is why, like, as you're actually looking at it, you have to be willing to say that the purpose of this text is to show forth that there is a lamb that was slain to redeem a donkey. And it's meant to say that one is of greater value than the other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes, we call it a beast of burden, and rightly so. It has purpose inside of an agricultural society. Like, you need it. Especially if you're traveling around the wilderness, you're going to need a donkey or two. But the major thrust here is...
You know what sharecroppers used? Themselves.
Mm.
It actually is a rest to the people
to have the donkey.
Yes, it really is. Because if the plowing is going to happen no matter what,
it's got to get done.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, in the midst of that, you recognize that the donkey has to be redeemed or it has to die. And you identify with that. And as you do that, and this is why I found it really interesting that there were so many arguments from Jewish scholars that were like, please stop associating uncleanness with sin. It was incredibly interesting to me. There were so many arguments, these are particularly rabbinic, and so many were arguing like, no, uncleanness and sin have no correlation. I'm like,
well, but to be fair, they don't always have correlation. Like in Leviticus, not everything that's unclean is sinful.
Give me an example.
Blood. It's not sinful to get your period.
It makes them unclean.
I understand.
So hold on. So let's play this out. So why is it that that happens?
I love Blake.
Like, sure, but I'm saying...
No, I'm saying it's anchor point, though. Its anchor point does go back to garden. There's a reason that when... Sorry, joke. Never mind, I'm not going to use that one.
Yeah, I understand.
Which is why someone... When a lady gets her period from time to time, I hear, cursed Eve, right? Like, it's because it finds its anchor point there.
True.
It's either of sin or a ramification of it.
Okay, I'll take that.
Yeah. And so, like, because of that, that uncleanness does have a clear association with sin. And so when you're carrying the thought, it's sin or death. Those are the two things.
Okay.
And so when you make your way forward and you're looking at it from, okay, well, what is the real problem here? The real problem is if sin never entered the world, we wouldn't be having conversations about clean, unclean.
True.
It all finds its anchor there. And so because of that, as you're progressing forward, you can't help but look into the New Testament and be like, well, okay, well, what actually makes one unclean? Well, Jesus says it's not what you put in your body. It's what comes out of your heart. And so the simple form, every Israelite is perpetually unclean before God. They're ceremonially clean or unclean, but they are in essence unclean because they are sinners and they need redemption. And that's why that redemption language, as we make our way into the New Testament, you can't divorce it from the consecration of the firstborn. That's where it comes from. Like its birthplace. So when we think about biblical theology, the first use of it is crucial. Like it's meant to draw a flag.
Say that
there.
Again.
Its first use
of it. What is it?
Any major theme. So like we say prophet, priest, and king in the garden, right? Well, you look at that and you're like, well, there's not a whole bunch of priestly, prophetic, or kingly ministry there, but there is some.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's developed. And so as it's built, you can't help but go back to the prototype. Mm-hmm. And so as uncleanness and ceremonially clean, ceremonially unclean, blood, oil, all of these things are used, it's like, well, why? And then as you make your way forward, I think we see like blood being the thing that cleanses, mm-hmm. oil being the thing that consecrates, that makes it something special and useful. Like you did the Leviticus overview a few years ago at this point. Right, I remember.
Yeah, that's why I said that, because I made the distinction between sin and unclean, because it exists. Like when I'm like,
yeah,
not everything that makes you unclean is because of your sin.
I hate when dad fights.
That's what I was trying to argue.
No, maybe not because of an individual sin.
Sure, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but in light of a sinful and fallen world.
But I think that the assumption from Christians often, when we don't think about uncleanness very often. Like in the ceremonial sense, that people were ceremonially unclean because of their sin. That's not necessarily true. Because of their own sin.
Okay, yeah. Because of their own sin.
That's all I was trying to say.
Yeah, what I'm trying to argue is that it finds its anchor point in sin in some way.
Yes, in the existence of sin.
Yes. True. And often the individual sin.
Sure.
Yeah. All right, so going and getting the donkey in the garden.
Yeah.
Bringing it to the tabernacle.
Yeah.
Jesus said, I think he said, I set my face
like flint.
Towards Jerusalem, right?
Yeah.
He's going to tear the veil.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm not allowed to read anything that Julie writes in her Bible. Like if I'm like caught looking at it, it's like I'm cheating on a test or something. Mm. So she asked me a couple of nights later, she was like, hey, it just hit me like, Jesus rode in to Jerusalem
on a donkey. Yeah.
Like, what do you think's there? And I'm like, oh, I think there's a lot there.
Yeah.
Like a whole lot.
Yeah.
Like everything that we've just talked about.
Yeah.
I think there's some shadows and types there.
Sure.
Did that ever cross?
I looked into it, but I didn't find anything that was a strong enough argument to make from the pulpit. Which is often the case for me.
Which means it's great conversation for the podcast around.
Yeah, so like I think Charles even brought this up a while back when we talked about it, which is like, I think one of them, I think maybe it may have been Charles, maybe it was you on the phone, where it was like the donkey and the lamb are going to the temple together,
mm-hmm.
which that's fun.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, again, I don't know if I could make the dogmatic argument. I think the major portion of this is the fulfillment of prophecy concerning Judah.
Yeah, because if you read too much in it, it's like the lamb's riding the donkey and like we're really being carried by him into the temple. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like when I have
we're carrying him. That's what you meant.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, but in reality.
Right, he's carrying
he's
us.
He's carrying us. So yes. Like if you read too much into
I think
it.
Sure. I think it was Charles that said maybe it says the cult of a donkey. So maybe this one was redeemed and this redeemed one
that is
was carrying.
Is that from the last episode?
Did we talk about that in the last one?
I don't know. He said it at some point.
Yeah, I thought that was fun too, but it's like, it's just pure conjecture. What?
Which is what this whole podcast is. Yeah,
it is. I don't care.
No, I don't think this podcast is just conjecture because it's anchored in, I think it's anchored in our understanding of temple and not only temple, but who's a participant and what. And so like going back.
And in the end that like, I think we again, fail to really thoughtfully and deeply appreciate the fact that through his success, through Christ's success
mm-hmm.
in his temple ministry,
right,
that all things
are declared clean. So I think that's anchored in the fact that sacrifices will no longer be made. Like so you have inside of Levitical law, right, the distinction between what you eat and what you don't eat.
But Paul was still making, there was still offerings being made.
Until AD 70 when God said quit it.
They were still using clean and
certainly.
Unclean. You know
certainly.
What I'm saying? Like, yeah. I'm saying, like, when the sheet comes down, like, you've got this,
yeah.
You've got a ramification
big
of his finished work saying, right. Hey, there's no longer separation.
Yeah.
Right.
That's what I'm getting after, though. I think that the reason, so you asked the question, well, why is it then that he would pull this back and be like, clean, unclean? They're all clean. And so, like, why? What's the massive shift between old covenant and new
covenant? Because he didn't change all their hoofs.
No, that's what I'm saying.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's like,
all of a sudden, all right, it's the hoof that did it.
So it seems like there's a statement there in regard to, okay, well, you can eat these things, you cannot eat these things. And I think it's fair to say that some of that is just, here, these animals are going, they're going to make you sick less.
Sure.
Yeah. Now, what was it? The council,
like, all things are lawful, not all things are profitable.
Yeah, fair, kinda. Fair, fair.
But the command from the council was
don't eat meat strangled in with blood in it.
Yeah. And refrain from sexual immorality.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's like these two things. Yeah. Well, what's going on?
So, but it seems to me like the massive pivot between old and new first is that you're not under ceremonial. You're not under ceremonial or civil. And so that being the case, and I'm speaking of ceremonial and civil law, like these are things that are ceremonially clean, ceremonially unclean. Then you make your way, and like, what's the massive pivot? Well, the massive pivot is fulfillment of the sacrificial system. Like, there is no sacrifices to be made anymore. There's actually an old, speaking of conjecture, there's an old argument, I think it's in the Talmud, where it talks about there was a scarlet thread. This is so off topic, but it's a scarlet thread that would be
Blake's
that would be tied that would be tied on the scapegoat, the one that would make its way into the wilderness, and then there was a scarlet thread that remained at the tabernacle. And so again, both scarlet and then the scapegoat would then go off into the wilderness carrying the sins of the people out. And when that scapegoat died, it was recorded that that scarlet thread would turn white. And so it was an indication that he actually did carry the sins away and then he died and the scarlet thread would turn white. And there's argument that it ceased happening after Christ's death, burial, and resurrection. Mm. That just stopped. And the argument is, the reason it stopped is because the sacrifice has already been made. There's no reason to do this any longer. Anyway, that is just conjecture, though.
Yeah, because as a Gentile, like when we hear the redemption of the firstborn,
mm-hmm.
we're like, oh, that's cool, man. Like that really, it's like, no, that's really not you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As a Gentile, you actually could not get there.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, yeah, you know what I'm saying? So really, the application that we should really find encouragement through is this donkey.
Yeah.
Like, because we are like Ishmael in our state, wild donkey of a men mm-hmm. of men, not of noble birth. We have no tribal inheritance within the commonwealth.
Yeah.
And we are that animal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That we have drawn a distinction to say, like, you are not supposed to be there. You're not the lamb. You are this donkey. And I think in the end, it's like when he brings that donkey through that ministry and now like you transform your understanding to be like, oh, well now I am both donkey and the redeemed mm-hmm. one because of what Christ has done for me. Mm-hmm. And I no longer live in a world, right? This is where Peter's mind was. I still live in that world.
Yeah.
Where I'm still drawing distinctions between clean and unclean.
Yeah.
Because he says, I've never from my birth eaten anything unclean.
Yeah.
And God rebukes him and says, what I call clean, it is clean. No longer.
Don't argue with me.
Yeah, don't argue with me. Do what I said. Now go and eat. Which I think is less about what he's really eating.
Right, of course. Yeah, yeah.
And more about
Gentile inclusion.
Yeah, and the power of God.
Yep.
Just to say, what I say goes.
Yep. Which is my favorite line, I do what I want.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yep. I have a verse.
Yeah, do it.
All right. It's a really good verse. All right. They're all good. Don't. It's a really good verse for the conversation at hand. Ephesians 2:11. Therefore, remember that one time you Gentiles in the flesh called the uncircumcision by what is called the circumcision, which is made in the flesh by hands. Remember that you were at that time separated from Christ, alienated from the commonwealth of Israel, and strangers to covenant promises, having no hope and without God in the world. But now, in Christ Jesus, you who once were far off have been brought near by the blood of Christ.
So I'd like to thank my fellow elders, Lawson Harlow and Blake McCullough, for the time spent today, fellas. You can eat anything you want. What's it going to be? What's it going to be, Lawson?
Like,
what would be the wildest thing?
I don't want anything wild.
Have you had, what's the wildest thing you've ever eaten? Animal-wise. I'll give you mine.
Possum, probably.
You've had possum?
Yeah, brother, wild game dinner.
I've had bear.
Yeah, I've had bear too. I've had raccoon.
Out on that.
Squirrel patties?
I'm out.
My grandmother, hold on, don't go away. My grandmother used to eat scrambled eggs and squirrel brains. My brothers and my friends. Godspeed. That's a true story, dude.
I believe that.
They say it's terrible for you.
Terrible for you, but it's just something in there.
Lawson.
Why
what?
Let me tell you about my...
Yeah, now you like my energy, right?
You want me to tell you about my dream that I had last night?
I don't want to hear it again.
I'm telling Donna, and the people need to know. So last night, I guess this morning, I wake up infuriated, just angry.
Because you dreamed about...
No.
And his dog?
No. So... Anyway,
you can't say anything.
You can't put that in there. Like, you can't put that
Nobody
in there.
Nobody knows anything.
No, you can't put that in there.
Anyways, your dream.
So I wake up infuriated. And the reason I wake up infuriated is because I had a dream that involved Charles Kinard, Blake McCullough, and Beth Harlow.
Whoa.
So in this dream, these two, Blake and Charles, that is, have this whole scheme. It's like, hey, guys. We're going to move to Alaska. We're going to move to a small town in like the most frigid part of Alaska that exists. And we're going to plant a church there. And I'm like, okay.
It's weird that it makes you angry. You don't think the gospel should go to Alaska.
I do think the gospel should go to Alaska, but I got stuff to do.
We should take a vision trip.
So anyway.
I'd like to take
one. I love how people say vision.
I'm not done with my story.
Vision trips for vacation. Right?
Yeah. It's like we're going to Las Vegas. Anyway.
Big vision trip.
So anyway, in this, they convinced me to move
to go on
like
a vision
literally
trip.
Like just take just leave here.
Yeah.
Just the no staff here anymore. It's just that's it.
Drew's still here.
No. In the dream, it's like you're closing the doors.
Oh.
So it's like, Anyway, so we get there and we have our first service. We're in a town of 12 people. The only people there are us, and we're in this most frigid environment of all time. And so Beth then, while I'm sleeping, Beth signs a mortgage to buy a house. I don't know, dude. Anyway, buys a house that's like quadruple the price of what we can afford.
Wow.
And I have my
this is literally and so I get nightmare.
My first 100%. I get my first bill and it's like $4,000 mortgage, which I just that's outside my pay range, right?
Naturally.
And so I'm infuriated. She takes me all the way to a third story in our house that we bought and can't afford. And it's like
that's probably why it was $4,000.
And it's like
three stories.
It's like, look at this. And it's a beautiful office. And I'm looking at this office and I'm even more angry. Because I'm like, so first of all, we can't eat. Secondly, this office is beautiful and we can't have it because we have to leave now. So then I try to pack up all of our stuff and I'm like throwing stuff in the snow. I wake up in the morning, I look at Beth and I'm like, how dare you? And so I've waited the entire day to tell both Charles and Blake that I'm infuriated with the both of them. for the things that happened in my dream, despite the fact that it was irrational.
Let's think deeply about this. Lawson, mm-hmm. why do you think you dreamed this? Mm-hmm. Are you harboring some kind of resentment toward us?
Probably.
And Beth?
Beth probably just wants nice things that I can't give her. That one's fair.
Sorry, I belched. You both looked at me.
All right, so anyway, we can go next. That's my So Blake and Charles segment.
You were being a lot nicer than me, Blake, because I almost did that really terrible friend thing where you go, cool story, bro. Which is a cheap laugh, and it feels good, but it makes the guy that's telling the story, it feels terrible, you know?
I have students, whenever I explain something like about my kids, because sometimes other students ask, they'll be like, who? And I'll be like, my kids. And they'll be like, who? And I'll say, who? And they'll say, asked. Like, who asked?
I didn't get that.
It infuriates me.
But it's funny. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
My dad used to always go, does somebody die in this story? This way of being like, can we get to the end? Yeah.
All right. You have a lot of energy today. How are you?
I'm good.
You're hanging out at like an 11.
You always tell me this.
No. I said yesterday you were hanging out around sassy.
Yeah, you said I was sassy.
Yeah. I found out why.
Why?
Because Julie wasn't there that night. She went to go get her nails done or something, and so he was just alone.
Being sassy by himself.
No, yeah. I feel like I had to give a defense for a lot of stuff. You know? Like animal death. It's like, I'm tired. You know, I'm just over here saying my stuff. I felt like I got sassy about that.
You did?
Yeah. Because the group text we were in, I used Charles's name in the group text.
Ouch, bro. That's wrong.
Well, Blake does it with brother.
So, you can just use the name.
Yeah. I mean, he's rubbing off on me.
He does. I figured out Jake's brother is guys.
Oh, wow.
Like, if he thinks you're being dumb, he's going to be like, guys, listen.
Listen, you're an idiot. Yeah. He went to get his hair cut today, and he had me recommend two people. And
Don? Jake?
Yeah, and I really hope that if he gets a haircut by two of the people I recommended, that it actually is good, so it doesn't...
That brother asked me, and he didn't. Dirty dog. Yeah. He didn't go where I go.
Can I have that egg?